time for the fastest 3 hours in morning talk radio, live and local. It's the Ed Dean Radio Show. Here he is, the headliner, the showstopper, the main event. Here's Ed Dean.
Well, I'm not hearing you out. Is your microphone on? Let's see here. Let's see. Let's make sure we got everything there.
I think when you said the showstopper, you meant literally like stopping the show.
We started exciting. We do it exciting.
The showstopper. Cut his mic quick.
That's it, folks. We'll see you at 9.
Yes.
Okay. Welcome to the Ed Dean Show. Alexander Pantanakis and Karen Morton filling in for Ed today, but let's go to Roger Henderson with the news at the top of the hour.
Good morning, guys. Even with Florida's rapid population growth, the number of active voters is declining in 2017. Statewide, between January 1st and August 31st, the roll of active voters shrank by 114,000 to 12.8 million. Republicans statewide shrank by about 27,000. Statewide Democrats shrank by 82,000. Democrats still hold the edge in total registration at 37.6% to the GOP's 35.4%. Florida does not permanently remove anyone from the voter rolls unless they die, are convicted of a felony, are judged mentally incapacitated, or are not citizens. Also, another reason why voters are shrinking is because when voters don't respond to mailing notices by the county, they are listed as inactive. Jacksonville Congressman John Rutherford is joining other members of the Republican Congress to support legislation to ban bump stocks, the kind of device the Las Vegas gunmen use to greatly increase the rate of firing. Rutherford signed on to a letter sent by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, urging them to reevaluate the regulation of bump stock devices. Florida Senator Marco Rubio is asking the U.S. Army to decommission an officer who posted pro-communist statements and photos on social media. In a letter to Acting Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy, Rubio said that the Army should consider revoking 2nd Lieutenant Spencer Rapone's West Point degree and force him to pay back his government-funded education. In late September, Rapone posted photos in his military uniform that showed him wearing a hat with the slogan, "Communism Will Win," and a Che Rivera t-shirt underneath his uniform. Rapone also expressed support and sympathy for Chelsea Manning, a convicted traitor. Senator Rubio said members of the military who harbor anti-American views and express their desire to harm our country are unfit to defend our nation. And that's what everyone talking about today.
Wow.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, the gentleman who went to West Point on the taxpayer dime seems to like communism. How do you get through, Karen, you have come from a military background yourself. How do you get through West Point with, I guess, seemingly liking communism and wearing the Che Guevara shirt?
And that's a tough college to get a degree
right.
from. It's not
I
easy
mean,
stuff.
Yeah. I know it was appointed by a Democrat senator, but a representative. But
when I saw the Che Guevara
obviously
thing.
They've got different faculty in there now than they would had 20 or 30 years ago.
Right.
That's crazy.
Is it still trendy for young folks to wear the Che Guevara shirts? I know that was going around forever. You remember that?
I've seen pictures of it. I don't know. Gosh, it's horrible.
And most of the folks that...
It's making a comeback with Antifa.
Right. Well, most of the folks that I think wear that, it's just an ignorance thing.
Yes.
I would like to think.
Yeah.
They don't know that man was like a mass murderer and probably not the guy you'd want on your J. Crew shirt or whatever. I wouldn't think that. But not the case for the officer you were talking about. It's the Ed Dean Radio Show on WBOB AM 600 and FM 101.1. The Answer. We'd love to take your calls as well. 904-222-8255. 904-222-TALK is the number here. Alexander Pantanakis, Karen Morton, and Roger Henderson in studio. Something else that Roger touched on, local GOP congressman and former Duval County Sheriff John Rutherford came out in support of the bump stock ban that is being talked about in Congress. I would love to take your thoughts on that if you'd like to call the number 904-222-TALK. Wayne LaPierre yesterday making the Sunday morning talk show rounds with the NRA, also saying that the NRA does not support the bump stock ban.
They're getting a lot of blowback from that too.
Yeah,
I think your hardcore NRA people are just saying, wait a second, infringement is infringement. I don't know. I haven't really actually given it much thought, but I guess as long as there's, I think everybody's afraid of that one step kind of deal.
Right.
Take one step and then they're going to want more because they've already made it incredibly clear that they intend to keep going until the Second Amendment is totally banned, removed.
And I think with Democrats, there's an intention by some, especially Ms. Feinstein from California, to jump on this, use this tragedy to push some sort of gun control thing, and really intend to use it as a wedge issue as we approach the 2018 mm-hmm. midterms. But if there's bipartisan support for this type of legislation, then that wedge issue goes out the window, I would imagine.
Yeah. But, you know, you read the Constitution, though, and this is just me being, for lack of better phraseology, a devil's advocate here. It does say well-regulated militia. And, you know, what we never hear that discussed in the entire Second Amendment argument.
Well,
I think the terminology well-regulated was slightly different back then, you know, in a historical context. I don't think it meant laws and regulations. I think it meant well-regulated as far as well-appointed, having a selection of. Well-regulated did not, there was no regulation of a militia per se. Well-regulated was more like having things available to you, a well-regulated. It had a different meaning, different in the context of 1700s.
Another the first story you mentioned as well, the fact that the total number of registered voters is shrinking in the state of Florida, that surprised me because we know that Florida, as population is concerned, is absolutely booming. We just passed New York.
I like that part of the...
I didn't know that. So Florida is now bigger than New York State.
Florida passed New York State. We're practically tied for all intent and purposes. Interestingly enough, we're just ahead of New York by maybe a few. But New York state budget is about double what Florida's is to serve about the same amount of people, which is an interesting little tidbit. But it's odd that as the state's population is increasing dramatically and people are leaving states like Illinois and New York and California, the number of registered voters actually decreased.
Yes.
So are the people that are moving here not registering to vote? Which may or may not be a bad thing.
Considering where they're moving from.
That's a totally different discussion.
That would be interesting to look at, you know, because, you know, when someone moves, they don't necessarily have to become a citizen right away. They may stay as a registered voter in their home state and vote absentee. Who knows?
Well, is another illegal problem we got. But, voting. Yeah, and then they'll eventually register here and vote twice, once by mail. From wherever they came from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're listening to the Ed Dean Show, WBOB AM 600 and FM 101.1, The Answer. So longtime listeners of Ed's show will know that he gives away money. Did he leave any of that money hanging around?
Are we giving away? Because Alex isn't giving away money, right?
I'm not giving away a cent.
Well, Karen's rich.
It's Ed Dean's money.
Yeah,
Ed
Dean. Karen's rich.
So do we have any of Ed Dean's money laying around here, AJ?
I don't know. Something tells me he took it with him in his large briefcase.
I wasn't sure. I was like, we got to talk about Ed Dean's money. But
he'll talk about that when he gets back.
He took it all.
Going back to this registration thing for a second, though, I'm wondering what effect, and this is something for us to check into. If anybody knows, give us a call. There was a movement for a while once Trump became president, and started pushing the special commission to check on, to investigate fraudulent voter activity. There were a lot of people across the country who went back in and just said, you know what, take me off the rolls.
I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking something similar, Karen. Mm-hmm. I remember a couple of election cycles back, there was a lot of controversy about voter suppression.
Yes.
With people being taken off the rolls without their knowledge, and they show up to vote.
Which wasn't here in Florida.
What I heard was happening, and then they're not registered anymore. And when you have a population that's growing from liberal areas in large part in the younger generation of people becoming eligible to find the voter rolls going down, we may hear some discussion about that again.
You might, but I don't think so much voter suppression as it is illegals taking themselves off the rolls because they were afraid they were going to the investigation was they were going to start coming after them, and as it was as well they should have been.
We
should have never been registered in the first place.
We are 15 minutes in and we are in the weeds very early into the program here.
That did not take long.
You're listening
Thank
to
you
the,
for the news,
the
Roger.
Ed Dean Show, no WBOB AM 600 and FM 101.1 FM. Again, if you missed that story, as it stands right now, 37.6%. Democrats in Florida. Republicans have 35.4%. I would imagine the rest are independents and third parties and all the rest, yeah. Roger.
Very, very growing segment of the electorate, independents.
Yeah. Well, not independents, not in Florida. In, the Independent Party was actually decertified by the state of
NPAs.
Florida. NPAs. No party affiliation.
No party affiliate, you're right.
We'll be back after this quick commercial break. Welcome back to the program. Alexander Pantanakis and Karen Morton filling in for Ed Dean. We'd love to take your calls as well. The number 904-222-8255. Another interesting tidbit coming out today. The White House has issued its list of demands on immigration in exchange. That's not the word that's being used, but I'm going to use that word. In exchange for being less stringent on DACA. And it's interesting to see the headlines that are coming out and how the phrasing is from our friends in the media in terms of this. Because we all know that there are headlines and then there are headlines. That there's the story and there's the guts, and that quote might get buried way down. I could think of a newspaper that comes to mind, but I'm going to hold my tongue because it's early in the broadcast. There's that quote that's way down the line, a few paragraphs down. But then the headline might be, you know, push the agenda that they want.
Right.
And headlines matter.
Yeah, headlines.
So
more and more so every day in this
Well,
in
because
this
also
world,
people don't read.
People don't bother.
So here, the White House released its demands. And CNN calls it, quote, the White House on Sunday night, yesterday, released an aggressive list of priorities. Aggressive list of priorities. The USA Today says White House issues list of hardline immigration demands. And again, keep in mind what these are here. This is the wall. This is expediting removals of unaccompanied children arriving at the border.
Right.
Tightening standards for people allowed to seek asylum in the United States. Barring immigrants who have been convicted of a range of crimes, including drunk driving, and barring federal grants to so-called sanctuary cities.
Perfect.
Now, when did... Is that hard line?
Not
it
to
seems
me.
Seems like fairly reasonable.
To me, that sounds... That's what we should have been doing all along. I guess it's hard line to actually try to pull people
Enforce
back
it.
Into... Yeah.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, the wall... Congress passed funding for the wall 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah,
this used to be something
we
that was bipartisan,
it.
That we all need to enforce the border. I mean, people might have disagreed. You want a wall or, you know, more troops or what? But it was like a common thing. Like, we need to enforce our borders. We're
exactly,
a country.
Exactly.
We have borders. We have a culture.
We have
all
border
these
laws.
Things. Correct.
Try to follow them for a change.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Now, according to at least CNN, USA Today, and some of our friends in the media, that thought process is now considered hardline, extreme,
yeah.
or whatever else.
Yeah.
It's really amazing how interesting the media can frame the argument on these things.
Yeah, exactly. Driving the issue just constant. And they know it works, you know, and that's why they just keep pounding. So,
yeah. I mean,
we got to pound back.
Yeah, this is the... part of the deal, right? You know,
exactly. And he's good at pounding back.
Yeah, well,
I love it.
Bob Corker found that out yesterday. I don't know if you saw those tweets. Senator Bob Corker earlier this week announced that he would not be seeking re-election to the Senate. He's a senator from Tennessee, a pretty powerful senator, was actually one of the top or final contenders to be Secretary of State back during the transition period, was a supporter of Trump. Well, things have run afoul, I think it's fair to say, between Senator Corker and Trump. Trump were tweeting out all kinds of things about the senator, saying that Corker begged for Trump's endorsement and Trump wouldn't do it, and that's why he's not running again. and all of these interesting things. It's going to be, and Marsha Blackburn, by the way, a congresswoman who's now running for the Senate to replace Bob Corker, has been, in my opinion, as rock solid as you can get on a lot of these issues.
I think so, too.
She would be a tremendous step up.
She'd be fantastic.
Over Corker.
Right. It's not a great loss. We just need to get her in there.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that follows through. Now, Corker has responded on Twitter. We live in this age where the press release, I think, will die. I think it's just going to be tweets.
It might be.
Well, now that Twitter is going, when are they rolling that out, the 280 characters thing? That's supposedly coming soon.
Yeah.
But Corker responds, and this is a quote. This is not from me. This is a quote from Senator Corker, senator from Tennessee.
Okay.
It's Corker. A shame the White House has become an adult daycare center. Someone obviously missed their shift this morning.
I think somebody got his feelings hurt. Ooh.
I think that's fair to say. I think that's very fair to say. That he got his feelings hurt.
Yeah. Right.
Then so Trump responds. Then Trump responds, Bob Corker gave us the Iran deal, and that's about it. We need health care. We need tax cuts / reform. We need people that can get the job done.
I agree with that.
But to add another twist into this, this is fascinating for folks that fill in for radio shows from time to time, and it's good to talk about, and it's fun. But when you look at the lack of major, quote-unquote major, legislative accomplishments, the disaster, the terrible three efforts at trying to repeal Obamacare didn't work. Tax reform coming this week, going to continue to roll that out. Immigration that we just talked about. These are all things that need to have a hand in the legislative process.
Absolutely.
So if you're the president, I'm asking you, Karen Morton, is it best to lob these things at members of your own party?
You know, I sometimes question tactics, but I'm hoping that things work the way they're supposed to. Unfortunately, when he's lobbing things at his own party, some of them are extremely well-deserved. Whether or not we should always do it publicly, I don't know. But, you know, his deal from the start always was, you know, hey, open transparency.
He is the most transparent president in history.
Absolutely.
We know exactly what he's thinking immediately.
Exactly.
There is he's not pulling any punches.
No doubt. And I after what some of the people of his own party have pulled in these last few months, it's somewhat fascinating to see them being called out for a change.
Well,
I think it's
great. I think it's great. I mean, the fact that Karen, we've known each other a long time. Roger, same. Mm-hmm. I've gone to bat for this party a lot.
I know. You and I used to have these discussions.
And we used to go round and round all the time. And I went, you know what? Because I thought that the Obama presidency was a disaster on many fronts. But the fact that we have full control of Congress, we have a slim majority, but a majority in the Senate, we have the White House. Mm-hmm. You go across states in the country, and we have more Republicans elected to governorships and members of their own legislative bodies than any time in our history.
Right.
And we can't get this done? Are you freaking kidding me?
Well, that's why this is incensed right now.
This is all we've talked about. Because I work with the party, I work with individual campaigns. Over the past 7 years, that is all Republicans have been saying.
We even
had candidates for state representative talking about repealing Obamacare, and obviously they have no control over what Obamacare is. But if you remember, if you were running for Congress or you're running for Senate or you're running for anything, and you were a Republican, you talked about repeal and replace Obamacare.
You talked about repeal.
No, the tagline
repeal and replace.
No, Karen,
way down the road.
No.
Oh, yes.
The tagline,
yes,
I remember it back in 08, is when, or 09-10, when this thing
replace.
Started.
Replace was not in there. Look at all those 37 bills that Congress passed so they could get reelected. We passed 37 bills to repeal Obamacare. Not repeal and replace. The bills were repealed.
I think everyone agreed that you needed to put in something. You can't just do a strict repeal. I don't think that would be very good to the system.
I do.
However, You can't go around telling people whether it's repeal or just repeal or replace
we
or whatever.
We had the best health care system in the world prior to Obamacare. What was the problem in repealing
it? The point was they said that they were going to repeal it, and the moment they had the power to do it, they didn't.
And, that's correct.
And you know what?
Which just shows you, John Boehner was famous for this. I've worked 30 years to take care of this issue. Well, what in God's name has taken 30 years? If it's been 30 years and you haven't managed to do anything about it, why are you here? And that is rampant in Washington, D.C. And it also shows you how many people really have gotten corrupted up there, regardless of party. Both parties are guilty on this. But they become beholden to something totally different than the electorate. Something totally different than the electorate. They don't care anymore. And it's time to replace those people. You want the Obama administration to be successful, and you want these policies
Trump.
Thank you very much. The Trump administration to be successful, and these policies to see the light of day. Then we need to get people up in Washington D.C. who can support those policies. We need to get real Republicans in there who will do what they say they're going to do. And I think that's what the Republican Party is, and the members of the Republican Party are so upset about these days, is that we're finding out that indeed a lot of these people are just full of hot air, and they're not doing their jobs, and it's time for them to go. We need people who are real Republicans, who are dedicated, who are honest.
The point remains, it is difficult to go back
to shut up.
It is difficult to go back to the well with people. There's a credibility gap here.
Right.
When you're a party and you say to people over and over and over again, we're going to do this, and it doesn't happen, how do you then go back? Well, this time we mean it. This time we have these new folks. I support it. I support the agenda. I'm just saying, as we approach 2018 and 2020 and beyond, that is something.
And we need to draw the division between the party and the candidates. They really are two different things. People get very confused about that.
You're listening to The Ed Dean Show. Alexander Pantanakis, Karen Morton, Roger Henderson in studio. Coming up, we will have a local candidate who's looking to make some waves on school board. We're going to talk about education issues coming up right after this on WBOB AM 600 and FM 101.1, The Answer. Welcome back to the program. Alexander Pantanakis, Roger Henderson, Karen Morton, filling in for Ed Dean this morning. You know, you ever listen to Rush? You ever hear him talking about recently nicotine-stained fingers?
He's been talking about those for 30 years. Recently,
I listen to WBOB guys.
So. I'm sorry. Well, but the I do have a point to my reference. My recently Dunkin' Donuts glazed. Stained fingers. Yeah. So, anyway, welcome back to the program. Let's go live now to our guest. LaTanya Peterson is a candidate for Clay County School Board District 1. Let's dive into some education issues here. Obviously, the most high-profile education discussion here in Florida took place with the governor signing HB 7069. LaTanya, welcome. First of all, let's go right out of the gate here. As we look at HB 7069, that was pushed by House Speaker Richard Corcoran, also passed by the Senate, of course, and was signed by the governor. Very controversial. Some folks in the teachers' union, certainly not a fan. What's your take on it?
Well, good morning, all. And my take on it is we have some great things that are in the bill. Yes, it is jam-packed. It's probably the largest bill we'll ever see. But it is a good starting point, and it is actually going to make some great strides in moving in the right direction towards education. For example, one of the scholarships that would help special needs students to continue to get their needs met, and it may not be in a traditional setting, is in that bill. So we're allowing families who know the needs of their children to get the help that they need and not have to worry about the funding source.
We're joined by LaTanya Peterson, candidate for Clay County School Board. Another thing this bill does, and I think this was the controversial part, In my opinion, it allows for competition, opening up charter schools and likewise to compete with public schools in terms of funding and measuring that based on real tangible results. As I mentioned, our friends in the teachers unions don't care for that, but in my opinion, it's a positive step forward.
And I agree, Alex. The problem that we have is we have to educate the community on what that really looks like. School choice is not a bad word. It's more like parental choice. We all want our children to get the best education possible, and this bill really aligns with that opportunity. Being able to say that my child is going to a charter school and having the right resources and the funds to help make it successful. It doesn't hurt the public education system. It enhances it. It gives us a competition. No one wants to just shop at one store. No one wants to just buy one car. So we have to diversify our educational system in order to be competitive outside of Florida and within Florida.
LaTanya, hi. This is Karen Morton. How are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Listen, what's the status with the Clay County Schools regarding the Common Core? What's going on with that?
Well, the disfortunate part is that we don't have the proper leadership to actually articulate our stance on Common Core. Mm. Right now, we have had a textbook adoption, and we had no one at the table to actually make sure that the books that we are choosing aren't fully incorporated in Common Core. So unfortunately, Karen, our students are not getting the best because of, once again, the leadership that we currently have on the school board side.
Mm-hmm. Which is one of the main reasons you're running, I'm assuming?
That is correct. We do need to have the right people at the table who have the educational experience and who can have the conversation of when these textbooks are coming in, when curriculum is coming in, to make sure that our students aren't being indoctrinated.
Perfect, perfect. Is there much of a communication between the parents and the school board in Clay County? I mean, is there much involvement with the parents?
No, it's not. It's one of those things where parents open up their newspaper and they figure out what's going on in the school board.
Wow.
Or they hear it on Facebook. We have to do a better job. We do have a new superintendent, and I know that's one of the things that he's working towards. But again, it has to be a partnership. All stakeholders, and parents are stakeholders, have to be at the table all the time. It can't be selective process. It can't be, everyone has to have a voice, and every representation of the school system has to be at the table.
We're joined by LaTanya Peterson, candidate for Clay County School Board. Our website, voteforpeterson.com. That's voteforpeterson.com. LaTanya, something I know you've talked a lot about on the campaign trail, something that's passionate for you. And I know it will intrigue a lot of our listeners, younger folks and critical thinking skills. That's something that you talk about on your website as well. More specifically, a lack of apparent critical thinking skills and how we develop that from an early age. Talk a little bit about that and what your idea is there.
So one thing that we have to start doing is allowing our children to become productive citizens. And it can start as early as elementary school. And it's something that I'd like to see happening as it's a building block. So what you're seeing in elementary will continue through junior high, middle school, and our high school. So when our students leave, they have CPR courses where they can help someone. They're able to navigate the financial banking where we're no longer having cashiers with their cell phones next to a calculator to give simple change. We have to start giving them the skills to be critical thinkers outside of technology, with incorporation of how to use technology, but also the life skills that you and I and everyone on this call, we were used to, we didn't frown upon it. We have to get back to those basics.
Hey, LaTanya, this is Roger Henderson, and thank you again for joining us today. I've got a question. My mom's a teacher, a retired teacher at this point, and I remember back when my girls were taking piano lessons. I got on the phone, was telling her, giving her the update on the grandkids and giving them the information they're taking piano lessons. Her response was, "That's great. They're going to do so good in math now." And I'm thinking, what in the world are you talking about? And then she explained to me that the same part of the brain that's exercised when the kids are reading sheet music is the same part of the brain that helps them with math. And with budgetary concerns and that sort of thing going on with schools locally and around the country, a lot of the extracurricular activities end up being the victims of budgetary cuts. Do you have a position on what the school board should be doing going forward with respect to extracurricular activities?
I come from that same world, and I believe that we need to offer everything we can, and I believe that we need to look at the top, you know, some of our top positions that we have and see if we really need them in order to facilitate the need of extracurricular activities. I believe in that we are hiring people to do leadership jobs. They don't need a support system in order to do so, and those resources could really fund the type of extracurricular activities you are talking about. We don't need to have PE on a rotating schedule. We don't need to have art on a cart. We don't need to have music where we're just listening to YouTube clips. We need to bring in the instruments, the things that we used to do. I remember being in elementary school and using a recorder. Most children don't even know what that is until they get to college. That's a major disconnect for me. And we have to get back to really and truly having our schools be our village and our village being able to take care of our next generation.
LaTanya Peterson, candidate for school board in Clay County, should be on the ballot next August. LaTanya, you're a conservative. We've known each other for a long time with your work with the Republican Party and also Governor Scott and others. Education for the longest time has seemed to be sort of the final frontier for conservative movement, in my opinion. It's kind of the last. It's not been our focus, I think it's fair to say, as conservatives. What's your thought on that and bringing a conservative policy agenda to an area where it might not be our number one concern?
Well, and as you know, working with the governor, it's his number one concern amongst making Florida the best economics. But we have to have the best school system. Businesses aren't going to come to Florida without knowing that their children are going to be taught. We have to do a lot better job, and we have some of the best and brightest students and families in our great state, and especially in Clay County. Clay County has some of the best families who are there, Alex, from August to June and all in between. We have great businesses who want to partner with the schools, but we have to give them that avenue. We have to bring them in, make them feel welcome. We have to continue to make them feel welcome and continue to have this dialogue open so that we're all meeting the needs. We want our children to come here, do great things, go off and come back. And if we can offer that opportunity, that's my goal. We, as a conservative, you know, we are really big on making sure our money is spent wisely, making sure our needs are being met conservatively, and doing the basic needs to make sure that we're giving that platform for everyone to feel like they have a good launching pad. And that's what education is all about. And we've got to get back to that as the party. As a outside of the party, it is a nonpartisan race, but I am a conservative, and I do believe in the basics and the fundamentals that we need to get this great county going back in the right direction.
LaTanya Peterson, thank you so much for joining us on the Ed Dean Show this morning. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You're listening to the Ed Dean Radio Show. Alexander Pantanakis, Roger Henderson, Karen Morton. Woo, that is a mouthful to say all three of them. And we got AJ Davis in the booth as well. We'll be back after this quick break. We'll also take your calls, 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255.
This is Dennis Prager. Join me weekdays at noon right here on WBOB.
Welcome back to the program. Alexander Pantanakis, Roger Henderson, and Karen Morton filling in for Ed Dean today. Let's go to the phones. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number here, 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255. Don is on the line. Don, welcome to the program. You had a question regarding education.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I missed your last guest. Roger, I think you were pointing out that your kids are into music and that sort of thing. And,
yes.
I was going to ask your last guest, and guess what? I'm a former band geek, and I got a math degree and engineering degree, and my wife's an aerospace engineer. We're music geeks. And I think that the connection between music and math is probably not an accurate connection. I think what it is that people that are capable of sitting down and doing really boring, tedious things like running up and down scales for an hour, half an hour, every day, instead of watching TV, have attention to detail, right? Or people that are capable of following through on tasks, you know, and boring things, not exciting things. And I also, it took me a long time because I was a college athlete, and I was a two-sport athlete in college. Guess what? A lot of my peers today in the executive leadership realm, they're also, you know, former high school and a lot of college athletes, actually a lot of college athletes, and I think it's the same thing. You know, getting up and, you know, running 5 or 6 miles before the sun comes up every day and, you know, doing the tedious things and practicing whatever their moves are or whatever their, you know, their sport is, even if you're not going to make it in the pros or anything big like that, it still demonstrates an ability to sit down and do really boring things for extended periods of time. And I think that parents like, you know, Roger, who have their kids doing the musical, you know, pursuits, or even, you know, folks that have their kids doing athletics, I think there's merit in all of it. It took me a long time to understand the merit in being an athlete, probably until 15 years into my career, you know, when I started kind of noticing who the execs were floating around me. They were, you know, former college basketball players and football players and things like that. But it's to do the boring stuff, do the tedious stuff. And as far as, like, the educational thing kind of goes, with your last guest, I was going to ask her, I was hoping to get on in time to ask her, you know, what her opinion was on dual tracks. And when I say a dual track, I have a girl at FSU, and I got a girl in middle school here in St. Johns County. And in the middle school track, they recently apparently started letting kids do, you know, if you're a sixth grader, you can do seventh and eighth grade math and that sort of thing until they figure out if you can do it anymore. And, you know, the standardized testing, I think, permits teachers or gives them the tools to be able to assess the kids that are able to excel, because they don't let kids skip grades or anything like that anymore. So I was wondering what your opinions on that were.
Don, thank you for the call. Two interesting points there. If you didn't hear him, he was talking about the dual track discussion and also the relationship between doing tedious things and ability to succeed in the workforce.
Well, I want
to
brag on my daughters a little bit for a minute.
That's okay. You can do that.
I don't know if I
they
agree
deserve
with him.
Bragging.
Thank you. I don't know if I agree with him on that, but, you know, because the research and the science supports the fact that the, you know, being able to read the scales and that sort of thing does have to do with the same part of the brain that does mathematics. By the way, my two daughters who really went gung-ho with these music lessons that they took, one of whom now has a degree in electrical engineering, and she's an electrical engineer right now with JEA, probably on her way to work right now.
So if your power's out, call Roger.
Exactly.
Right? The number here. Is, yeah.
And actually, her job is to turn the power out. But anyway, I won't get into all that.
Oh.
And
then, well, then really call Roger.
In yeah. An emergency that's, oh, you know, setting up the systems where they trip off automatically. Anyway, secondly, another daughter who was really good with her music, and she got her degree, is in biology, and she now works for a medical firm locally and runs one of their departments. So I think they do very well. But it's not just...
Not the parenting, it was the piano.
Exactly. But it's not just music lessons as extracurricular. He alluded to sports. Mm-hmm. I've got a friend who's a coach at one of the local high schools here. He says that we should never punish our children by taking away their sports from school. Let them stay involved with that, because all the research shows young ladies especially who were involved with competitive sports, their self-esteem is off the charts. They do better in academics. Their lifelong achievements are a lot higher than girls who were not in sports. Self-esteem is higher. Less likely to be in an abusive relationship. Less likely to have an unplanned teenage pregnancy. That sort of things. All they say that are indicators of young ladies, especially who were involved with sports in high school.
Well, and sports definitely teaches a lot of things like stick-to-itiveness.
Yes.
You know, the determination to win, to succeed, and I think that obviously carries on through life. Once you have those skills and you understand the benefits of it, it just becomes second nature. So definitely worthwhile. Definitely worthwhile.
I totally agree. The Ed Dean Show, the number here, 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255, if you would like to join the conversation. Coming up, Karen, in the next hour, we're going to delve into a discussion of tax reform. Mm-hmm. The Trump administration has been slowly unveiling parts of the plan and different things. It started that a few months ago, actually, with the Mnuchin. I do remember that press conference. But last week, getting a little more specific, and how that would affect mm-hmm. business owners and the economy. But we'll hear from a local business owner himself about why we need tax reform, how complicated the system is, which won't isn't a shock to many of our listeners, of course, but how complicated and burdensome the system is and how costly it can be.
Absolutely.
And really ultimately winds up killing jobs.
Yeah, it does. It does. I think the nation is thrilled to be talking about tax reform, and I think they're thrilled about talking about simplifying the tax process. Everybody's thrilled about that except for H&R Block and the CPAs of the world.
Not every CPA. We have a CPA on Monday afternoons, 2 o'clock on WBOB, Nick Semenik. He actually prefers the fair tax.
Ah, yeah.
And that way he can spend all of his time helping his clients develop investments and get out of debt and that sort of thing.
He can go on to other things, exactly. Yeah, and I think it's definitely a discussion that's long overdue.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is the thing with GOP leaders, and there's an article in The Hill this morning, if you're unfortunately stumbled in The Hill's website. I'm sorry if you've done that, but there's an interesting article in The Hill about the warning signs, the GOP tax push, and as we go into this legislative process, how there's disagreements within the party about
what to
get done. How shocking. Some support the fair tax. Others support more of a flat tax. I mean, remember Herman Cain's 999.
Right,
and there's the
right.
Trump plan. And there's all these different things. And it is my hope that our Republicans in Congress don't get lost in the weeds on this.
I don't think
there is one right answer here. I mean, I would prefer the fair tax personally, as our friend Nick Semenik would. But if we're looking at reducing the overall rate and reducing taxes overall and getting the economy going again, but it's not the fair tax, I'd be okay with that.
The fact that I would really like to go back to the Constitution where it says that income is not to be taxed.
Okay. Mm-mm. But this is part of the problem. I'm not going to look the gift horse in the mouth.
Okay, yeah.
We're in a point where, you know what?
We'll take anything that's
better. If we're going to drastically reduce taxes, I'll take that plan.
Yeah.
For now. That one
works. For now. And then we'll use that as the stepping stone for the next move.
But you'd be amazed to get this economy rolling again. People laugh at the idea of 4% growth. I think if we had a reasonable tax plan in this country, mm-hmm. Something that you could fill out on a postcard or a post-it note or whatever the plan is, as opposed to, you know, pounds and pounds and pounds of paperwork.
Right.
You really get business rolling.
Something that does indeed reduce the tax burden on individuals and on businesses. You go back to John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy was one of the major proponents. Democrat president, but he was fiscally conservative, and he always spoke about lowering taxes to increase overall revenues to the government because of the boost in the economy, more jobs, more people working, more profit levels, more tax. Therefore, even though the tax levels were the rates were lower, the dollars coming into Washington, D.C. would increase. He was a huge proponent of that. I wish the Democrats would get back to maybe reading some of those.
I think those days are long gone.
Well, that's true. That's true. He's probably spinning when he hears some of the stuff from the Democrat Party now. Everybody's changed. But that's exactly what we need to take a look at and realize it really is true. You lower the tax rates. You allow the economy to grow, bottom line number dollar still increases going into the coffers in Washington, D.C. to get done what needs to be done.
According to The Hill, two of the most vocal Republican senators that are skeptic about the plan include, hold your breath, Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky and what we mentioned earlier, Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, which is shocking. So here's hoping that we can get that through and get some real tax reform done in this country.
We will, of
course, monitor that here in the months ahead, right here on The Ed Dean Show on WBOB AM 600 and FM 101.1. The Answer. We will be back after this quick commercial break.
This is Dennis Prager. Join me weekdays at noon right here on WBOB.